Sometimes we may know what we should do, but become nervous about doing it.
Why would we be nervous?
Frightened of the unknown.
What's unknown?
In our Krishna conscious development.
Well, there shouldn't be any unknown. We have so many books just to tell us what is to be known, and to chart the course of development for us, so it shouldn't be unknown. But there's always, a leap of faith that's required, that's for sure. And it's never going to be a situation such that you can take no risks. That means no faith. So there'll be risks. We have to be willing to take risks. And then one has to be fearless. Ultimately, that's what it's about. Ladies, men, doesn't matter. The tradition was that vanaprastha, when we use this word vanaprastha, and this isn't meant for someone who's renounced, it means that one goes to the forest. If you read Srimad Bhagavatam, it's really a very, very austere lifestyle. But that was for everybody. That was for all higher class people, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Brahmanas. They would do at least that if they didn't take sannyas. Only people who are bold achieve anything, either materially or spiritually. Achievers in the world are all bold people. Whether they're, Napoleons or Bill Gateses or somebody, they're people who take risks, who believe in whatever they believe in, and are determined to get a result, and are willing to go forward where other people haven't gone. That's why they do something others haven't done. So, the good thing is we're not going somewhere where other people haven't gone, we're going where other people have gone. We want to go to that same place that others have gone. So all we have to do is actually follow the guidelines that they've already set out. So it's not, there's nothing unknown in Krishna consciousness. It's just a matter of having faith that what the next step is, and we always have to make the next step, whatever comes is all right, whether it's good or bad. There's nothing really bad, just from the material point of view.
We have a lot of our congregation members and good pious people pass away, yet they haven't had a spiritual master. They're just pious in the family. They might have read Bhagavad-gita, or the pious that pass away in an auspicious condition. Does that mean they go back to Godhead, or what's their situation? What's the destination of these sort of people?
Auspicious. There's so many things that are auspicious. Auspicious may may lead to human birth, auspicious may lead to heavenly planets. You need to have more than just auspiciousness to go back to Godhead. You need Krishna consciousness. You need a real credit of devotional activity. So material piety is by no means qualification for Krishna consciousness. For going back to God, it may be a qualification by which someone takes up devotional service and they may be able to practice it easily, but without chanting Hare Krishna, without surrendering, without actually engaging. Krishna consciousness doesn't necessarily mean back to Godhead in one life. It depends what we want. So that's the formula. Jyanti deva pita deva. What do you want? What is it that you've lived for? So we've got this motto, Prabhupada's driven in our head, back home, back to Godhead. And one way or another, we're trying to get there. If you're not even trying to get there, you've got to have done some extraordinary agyata sukriti to just sort of coincidentally pop into the spiritual world. Then you get the opportunity. Pious means, auspicious departure means, next life you become a devotee.
So someone who's just after hearing Bhagavad Gita decided to learn, and then they saw
Gandhi was chanting Jai Ram. He didn't go back to Gandhi. I won't make any statements that could be misconstrued as being political as to where he could have gone, but because he didn't believe that Ram was a Supreme Personality of God. So it requires what is our yam yam bhati swaram bhavam? What is your swaram bhava? What is your mood and mentality at the time of death with which you die? And it isn't something that just accrues at that, or just comes out of nothing. It accrues out of a lifetime of meditation. So we may think that we're suffering and struggling here in Krishna consciousness, but actually that struggle to be Krishna conscious is keeping us Krishna conscious. And as long as we keep struggling, it gives us, that's our smaran, that's our meditation. Constant meditation is how to be Krishna conscious through thick and thin. And that will hopefully increase as we advance and get older, and then at the time of death, then that will actually be our meditation. But if someone is not living for that, focusing for that, meditating upon that throughout their life, then, as Krishna says, that the happiness and piety, the spirituality that comes from the mode of goodness, is the obstruction to advancement in spiritual life and what keeps you here in the material world. The happiness that comes from the knowledge and sinfulness of a pious life, if it's not dovetailed with detachment and knowledge and transcendental knowledge and advancing in Krishna consciousness, then it becomes the very conditioning that binds you. But it gives you a human life, human birth and next life, which is pretty rare nowadays. Because Prabhupada says most people in Kali Yuga are not getting a human body.
Because my mother is staying with us now, and she's chanting one round a day, she's reading the Krishna book, She knows prasadam, boga, all that. And sometimes she's cutting fruit for the deity. She's taking shower every day.
She's taking shower every day. I hope so.
In the morning, sorry. In the morning. And she's very favorable to Krishna consciousness and all that. But, and she's saying to me, oh, you have to help as much as you can, because I'm doing service now. She said, yeah, you should help your spiritual master as much as you can, all that. She's asking questions, he's answering about what means to be sannyasi or grihastha, things like that. But I don't know to what level I can cost, how much I can push, how much she can take. Because I don't want to pry her, or I don't know how to explain. It's just...
Anyway, anyone who's, if she's doing devotional activity, it means that she'll be qualified to do more. And it's a question of, just like if you teach children, the more you teach them, the more they know, the more they can learn. But you can't push them. There's an education system, isn't it? You get them from first grade to university in 2 years or something. It takes time. So, same thing. You have to know what the system is, education system, how much people can digest at a time. Some kids are geniuses, like that Radhika Ramana, and get his PhD by the time he's 16 or something, or 18. And then, but generally it takes twice as long. But you should just, and that's called preaching.
Because I'm not a preacher.
Well, no, everyone has to know. That's the principle of that other book, that Sudha Bhakti Chintamani, it's the duty of everyone to know what is their particular spiritual status and what is the next stage of devotional service for which they're eligible. Not to do so is irreligion. That is called religion, and not knowing that is called being irreligious. Or Rupa Goswami then says, Niyamagraha, how does it go? Atyahara Prayasasya Pajapara Niyamagraha. Niyamagraha, Niyamagraha. So, Sadhya Bhakti, these things will ruin someone's spiritual life. That's ignorance to say that I don't know. It's like, I did not know. And Krishna consciousness for so many years, you have to know where you are, you have to know where the other person is, you have to know what they're capable of, otherwise how do we go forward?
Because she's very sensitive.
It doesn't matter. That's just a detail. But we have to know what we're eligible for, we have to know what other people are eligible for. It's your mother, it's not a stranger.
I don't know her actually, she's so...
That's a problem.
Because, I don't know. She helped my father when my father left his body, so I left her tulsi leaves, and she put tulsi leaves on his tongue, and maha gowns on him, so she said she did all that just to help him on his journey.
Anyway, by chanting, she's making advancement. Advancement means that one will then be able to do more. It's the natural system. That's how education works. When you teach children in grade 3, then when they have knowledge of grade 3, they can go to grade 4, and that's how you progress. So we need to be situated also. We need to know what we're capable of and what the next step is.
I pretty much, I wrote something on the podcast to ask a question a week or so ago, and it didn't come up, it didn't get answered, and I'm really sorry because I'm a bit embarrassed. I don't know if it's a stupid question or not, but you can ask it again just to see if it...
That's because I haven't been able to log on now, I can't. But before, I was in Wales traveling.
Okay.
I can't do it through my telephone. It's too slow. So what's the question?
I'm a bit embarrassed to ask it because I should know the answer, but I don't know. So
Charlie's embarrassed for something.
I'm embarrassed when I start, but I'm embarrassed when So in the spiritual world, not in Gokul, but in Goloka, I didn't see any mention of babies, and I was wondering is in Goloka, are there babies? Not children, but babies, you know, like infants. I just never seen any reference to them at all.
Well, there are Krishna's also present in the baby form, and you can bet he's not going to be there alone as a baby or as an infant. Although what's generally described is that he's there as a youth, and that's his eternal form, and that's the one that is consistently, but it's also described that simultaneous with that other features manifest according to desire of devotees, and he's not going to be the only one who's either as a baby or a little boy or so on. Then everyone else is also like that.
So, like you know, you're explaining in your book that in, I think it was Prishasangati, that sometimes the demons are manifested by yoga maya for Krishna's, you know, to have some variety for the Lord. So do you think that the babies are like their eternal Sarupa, or are the babies manifest at that time for the Lord's pleasure, or do you think are there living entities who have aspired to that position?
No, it's just that Krishna's eternally like a kishore in Goloka, but also his associates enjoy his other eternal pastimes. But there's a distinction between here, because here it's sort of like chronological, and when one is there, the others aren't. There it appears that there simultaneously can be going on. But it's more than that statement. It's not described, so it's not worth going into. And that may not be the spiritual that we perceive either. In other words, the spiritual world that Sanatana Goswami talks about is very different than what other acharyas talk about. I mean, Prabhupada makes it very clear that there are no demons in the spiritual world. Sanatana Goswami, so does everyone else. He brings in this whole new concept about demons in the spiritual world. So the spiritual world is not limited like our minds. So many things can be going on there simultaneously. So different for different folks, different things. It's not limited. It's not that something can't happen there. Anything can happen that Krishna wants, that devotees want.
Okay. But if Srila Prabhupada hasn't mentioned it, would it be considered, would Sanatana Goswami's statements, I know that you've mentioned it in your book, but would his statements could be considered heretical, not that we could even say such a thing?
No.
If Prabhupada hasn't mentioned it.
No. Prabhupada hasn't mentioned it, but Prabhupada hasn't said that it isn't so. He mentions, Prabhupada mentions the general description of the spiritual world that all acharyas say, and then Prabhupada also says that we should read Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Sanatana Goswami. And, Prabhupada's business is to support Sanatana Goswami's statements and not claim them to be heretical. No, it's not a matter of heresy. It's a matter of our ignorance. We don't understand how transcendence works because we're so limited. So rather, whatever those things that are beyond our conception, we should just accept them, and then later as we advance, we may understand them, we may not. That's not important. It's unlimited. Sometimes some people have one perception of the unlimited nature, and sometimes some the other. There's no contradiction. It's unlimited, and no matter who you are, it's the little living entity. Krishna is the only unlimited person.
When we talk about Prabhupada's books,
I was just sitting at the Pranas place, and he had this little diary, a calendar, some Vrindavan calendar, and it's just got quotes on it, pictures. It's very nice. It's a quote for the day, and I just looked at tomorrow, and I've not remembered, because Prabhupada makes so many statements that Krishna left Vrindavan and never came back. And I was looking for a statement, but I was waiting for Krishna, and here it is right in front of me, inside of the 8th chapter of the 10th canto. So it was right at the end, and Prabhupada saying that he's talking about Mother Yashoda, that Krishna is never separated from Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda is never separated from Krishna. And then Prabhupada says, even when Krishna went to Dwarka, he would come back to Vrindavan and sit in Mother Yashoda's lap. We said, whenever he would come back to Vrindavan, meaning that he came back more than once. So Prabhupada said so many things also. Prabhupada said, Krishna left Vrindavan and never came back. A lot of people write me about that. And I wrote, Krishna, what are you talking about? Krishna's come back. Prabhupada said he never came back. Maybe that's what he said, but acharyas are also saying that he comes back. Prabhupada also infers that he comes back in the first chapter, first canto of Bhagavatam. But here, Prabhupada said, so somewhere Prabhupada says, he never comes back. And here he says, whenever he comes back.
We've got the books of Prabhupada now translated into current English. When the society develops after, 100 years, 200 years...
Degrades. Well, hopefully it'll develop.
So the English language will change. What is the... How will the book be preserved? Will there be comments for Prabhupada's books?
I heard that someone just mentioned to me, Keshe Bhardwaj just told me that the newest in vogue word for cool is poison. That's poison. Is that true? Yeah? You must know. You're in touch. Huh? Is that true? You haven't heard of it?
It's the latest one. The one they know, it's bad. If everything's bad, then it's cool.
Bad?
Yeah.
So that's that's how the language is going to change. When you want to say something's good, you have to say it's bad. So what will happen to them?
Yeah, even your books, Guru Maharaj, in 500 years, will there be books written to comment on your books and Prabhupada's books? How will people understand?
Just like the language, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, that's an issue that BBT is talking about, that the language should be changed.
Wow.
Otherwise, what are you going to do? Try and read, like, you know, Canterbury Tales, and you can't understand what it says, so then what's the use? So are we interested in what Prabhupada's communicating, or are we just interested in words? Which, after a while, don't mean anything to anyone, so then we say, yeah, here's this great book that no one can understand. That wasn't Prabhupada. And, you know, Prabhupada told his editors, make it nice, so that it's in nice, he didn't say, preserve all my words, and just say, he told his editors, make it nice, so it's in nice English. So if English language changes, Prabhupada wants, and, you know, saying that, you know, Krishna is bad means that he's good, then you have to change the words.
And what would be the qualification of someone to comment on Prabhupada's books or to
that they understand them, that they understand the meaning, and they communicate the same meaning? How do you translate from one language to another? What's the qualification? You understand the meaning. You don't just translate the words. You understand what the books mean, and then you translate them. So what's the difference? You translate it from, I don't know, from English to Italian, or you translate from 20th century English to 25th century English. It's just translating. Why the big thing?
Now, our promise, the play The Promise, some guests came and said, this play's like, reminds me of Thatcher in the 80s. You know? They were saying, it's a bit out of date.
Mm-hmm.
It's mood, presentation, and content.
Yeah, we really need to
upgrade.
That's what preaching means, we have to be with the times.
Update, not upgrade. Necessary.
Just a word.
Okay. I have to, aside from having to constantly record myself, I don't know what.